and materializations of all kinds, that the development of etheric faculties confers new powers and reveals many etheric phenomena, which are beyond the experience of most men, that by the use of the matter of the etheric body objects may be magnetized, much as living beings may be mesmerized, and, finally, that the etheric body provides the material out of which the substance known as ectoplasm is formed. The etheric double has been given a variety of names. In early theosophical literature it was often called the astral body, the astral man, or the linga sharira. In all later writings, however, none of these terms are ever applied to the etheric double, as they belong properly to the body composed of astral matter, the body of karma of the Hindus. In reading the secret doctrine, therefore, and other books of the older literature, the student must be on his guard not to confuse the two quite distinct bodies, known today as the etheric double and the astral body. The correct Hindu name for the etheric double is Pranamikosha, or vehicle of prana. In German it is known as the doppelganger. After death, when separated from the dense physical body, it is known as the wraith, and has also been called the phantom, apparition, or churchyard ghost. In Raja Yoga the etheric double and the dense body together are known as the sth lopadi, or lowest upadi of Atma. Every solid, liquid and gaseous particle of the physical body is surrounded with an etheric envelope, hence the etheric double, as its name implies, is a perfect duplicate of the dense form. In size it projects about 1/4 of an inch beyond the skin. The etheric aura, however, or health aura as it is frequently called, projects normally several inches beyond the skin. This will be further described later. It is important to notice that the dense body and the etheric double vary together as to their quality. Hence one who sets himself deliberately to purify his dense body, at the same time automatically refines its etheric counterpart. Into the composition of the etheric double must enter something of all the different grades of etheric matter, but the proportions may vary greatly, and are determined by several factors, such as the race, sub-race, and the type of man, as well as by his individual karma. As yet, the only information which the compiler has been able to gather regarding the particular properties and functions of each of the four grades of etheric matter is the following: 1. Etheric, the medium of ordinary current electricity, and of sound. 2. Superetheric, the medium of light. 3. Subatomic, the medium of the finer forms of electricity. 4. Atomic, the medium for the transmission of thought from brain to brain. In appearance the etheric double is a pale violet-gray or blue-gray, faintly luminous, and coarse or fine in texture according as the dense physical body is coarse or fine. The etheric double has two main functions. Firstly, it absorbs prana, or vitality, and distributes this to the whole body, as we shall see in detail presently. Secondly, it acts as an intermediary or bridge between the dense physical body and the astral body, transmitting the consciousness of physical sense contacts through the etheric brain to the astral body, and also transmitting consciousness from the astral and higher levels down into the physical brain and nervous system. In addition, the etheric double develops within itself certain centers by means of which the man is able to cognize the etheric world and its hosts of etheric phenomena. These powers or faculties will also be described in due course. It is important to recognize that the etheric double, being merely a part of the physical body, is not normally capable of acting as a separate vehicle of consciousness, in which a man can live or function. It has only a diffused consciousness belonging to its parts, and has no mentality, nor does it readily serve as a medium of mentality, when disjoined from the dense counterpart. As it is a vehicle, not of mental consciousness, but of prana or vitality, its dislocation from the dense particles to which it conveys the life currents is disturbing and unhealthy. In normal, healthy persons, in fact, the separation of the etheric double from the dense body is a matter of difficulty, and the double is unable to move away from the body to which it belongs. In persons known as physical or materializing mediums the double is comparatively easily detachable, and its etheric matter forms the basis of many phenomena of materialization, which will be dealt with more fully in a later chapter. The double may be separated from the dense physical body by accident, death, anesthetics, such as ether or gas, or mesmerism. The double being the connecting link between the brain and the higher consciousness, the forcible extrusion of it from the dense physical body by anesthetics necessarily produces anesthesia. Further than this, the etheric matter thus forced out usually wraps itself round the astral body, and dulls the consciousness of that vehicle also. Hence, after the effects of anesthetics have worn off, there is usually no memory in the brain consciousness of the time spent in the astral vehicle. The method and consequences of withdrawal of etheric matter by mesmerism will be dealt with more fully in the chapter specially devoted to the purpose. In conditions of weak health or nervous excitement, the etheric double may also in great part be extruded from its dense counterpart. The latter then becomes very dully conscious, or entranced, according to the lesser or greater amount of the etheric matter extruded. Separation of the double from the dense body is generally accompanied by a considerable decrease of vitality in the latter, the double becoming more vitalized as the energy in the dense body diminishes. In Posthumous Humanity, Colonel Alcott says, when the double is projected by a trained expert, even the body seems torpid, and the mind in a brown study or dazed state, the eyes are lifeless in expression, the heart and lung actions feeble and often temperature much lowered. It is very dangerous to make any sudden noise or burst into a room under such circumstances, for, the double being by instantaneous reaction drawn back into the body, the heart convulsively palpitates, and death may be caused. So intimate, in fact, is the connection between the etheric and the dense bodies that an injury inflicted on the etheric double will appear as a lesion on the dense body, this being an instance of the curious phenomenon known as repercussion. It is well known that repercussion can also occur in the case of the astral body, an injury to the latter, under certain circumstances, reproducing itself in the physical body. It seems probable, however, that repercussion can occur only in the case of a perfect materialization, where the form is both visible and tangible, and not when it is, -1, tangible though not visible, or 2, visible though not tangible. It must be borne in mind that the above applies only where matter of the etheric double is used for the materialized form. When the materialization is formed of matter, from the circumambient ether, an injury to the form could affect the physical body by repercussion no more than an injury to a marble statue could injure the man himself. It must also be borne in mind that etheric matter, though invisible to ordinary sight, is still purely physical, and can therefore be affected by cold and heat, and also powerful acids. Persons who have lost a limb by amputation sometimes complain that they can feel pain at the extremities of the amputated limb, that is, at the place where the limb used to be. This is due to the fact that the etheric portion of the limb is not removed with the dense physical portion, but can still be seen in its place by clairvoyant sight, and therefore, under suitable stimulus, sensations can be aroused in this etheric limb and transmitted to the consciousness. There are a large number of other phenomena connected with the etheric double, its extrusion from the dense body, its emanations, and so forth. But these can be dealt with more conveniently and satisfactorily at a later stage, after we have studied the nature and the methods of working prana, or vitality. Chapter 2 Prana, or Vitality. It is known to occultists that there are at least three separate and distinct forces which emanate from the sun and reach our planet. There may be countless other forces, for all we know to the contrary. But at any rate we know of these three. They are, 1, Fohat, or electricity 2. Prana, or vitality 3, Kundalini, or serpent fire. Fohat or electricity, comprises practically all the physical forces of which we know, all of which are convertible into one another, such as electricity, magnetism, light, heat, sound, chemical affinity, motion, and so forth. Prana, or vitality, is a vital force, the existence of which is not yet formally recognized by orthodox Western scientists, though probably a few of them suspect it. Kundalini, or serpent fire, is a force known as yet only to very few. It is entirely unknown and unsuspected by orthodox Western science. These are three forces remain distinct, and none of them can at this level be converted into either of the others. This is a point of great importance, which the student should clearly grasp. Further, These three forces have no connection with the three great outpourings. The outpourings are definite efforts made by the solar deity. Fohat, Prana and Kundalini, on the other hand, seem rather the results of his life, his qualities in manifestation without any visible effort. Since this document was compiled, the chakras by C.W.Leadbeater has appeared. In the chakras it is stated that the three forces mentioned are connected with the outpourings, as follows. The first outpouring, from the third logos, is the primary force which manufactured the chemical elements. This appears to be Fohat. The second outpouring, from the second logos, has prana as one of its aspects. Kundalini is a further development, on the ascending arc, of the first outpouring. Prana is a Sanskrit word, derived from pra, forth, and an, to breathe, move, live. Thus pra-an, prana, means to breathe forth, life breath or life energy being the nearest English equivalents of the Sanskrit term. As, in Hindu thought, there is but one life, one consciousness, prana has been used for the Supreme Self, the energy of the One, the life of the Logos. Hence, life on each plane may be spoken of as the prana of the plane, prana becoming the life breath in every creature. I am prana. Prana is life, says Indra, the great Deva who stands as the head of the hierarchy of the life in the lower world. Prana here clearly means the totality of the life forces. In the Mundaka Upanishad it is stated that from Brahman the One comes prana, or life. Prana is also described as Atma in its outgoing activity. From Atma this prana is born, Prashnupanishad. Shankara says that prana is Kriyashakti, the Shakti of doing, not of knowing. It is classed as one of the seven elements, which correspond to the seven regions of the universe, the seven sheaths of Brahman, and so forth. These are, prana, manas, ether, fire, air, water, earth. The Hebrews speak of the breath of life, which they call nefesh, breathed into the nostrils of Adam. Nefesh, however, is not strictly speaking prana alone, but prana combined with the next principle, karma. These together make the vital spark that is the breath of life in man, in beast or insect, a physical, material life. Translated into more Western terms, prana, on the physical plane, is best described as vitality, as the integrating energy that coordinates the physical molecules, cells, etc., and holds them together as a definite organism. It is the life breath within the organism, the portion of the universal life breath, appropriated by a given organism during the period of bodily existence that we speak of as a life. Were it not for the presence of prana, there could be no physical body as an integral whole, working as one entity. Without prana the body would be nothing more than a collection of independent cells. Prana links up and connects these into one complex whole, playing along the branches and meshes of the life web, that shimmering golden web of inconceivable fineness and delicate beauty, formed out of a single thread of Buddhic matter, a prolongation of the Sutratma, within the meshes of which the coarser atoms are built together. Prana is absorbed by all living organisms, a sufficient supply of it seeming to be a necessity of their existence. It is not, therefore, in any sense a product of life, but the living animal, plant, etc., are its products. Too great an exuberance of it in the nervous system may lead to disease and death, just as too little leads to exhaustion and ultimately death. H.P. Blavatsky compares prana, the active power producing all vital phenomena, to oxygen, the supporter of combustion, the life-giving gas, the active chemical agent in all organic life. A comparison is also drawn between the etheric double, the inert vehicle of life, and nitrogen, an inert gas with which oxygen is mixed to adapt the latter for animal respiration, and which also enters largely into all organic substances. The fact that the cat is preeminently endowed with prana has given rise to the popular idea of the cat having nine lives, and appears to have been indirectly connected with the reasons for this animal being regarded in Egypt as sacred. On the physical plane, prana builds up all minerals, and is the controlling agent in the chemical-physiological changes in protoplasm, which lead to differentiation and the building of the various tissues of bodies and plants, animals and men. They show its presence by the power of responding to stimuli. The blending of astral with physical prana creates nerve matter, which is fundamentally the cell, and which gives the power to feel pleasure and pain. The cells develop into fibers, as the result of thought, the prana pulsating along those fibers being composed of physical, astral and mental prana. Within the physical plane atoms themselves, the prana courses along the spiral. In our chain, in the first round, the monadic life, flowing through the spiritual triad, Atma Buddhi Manas, vivifies the first set of spiral, and these are used by the pranic currents which affect the dense physical body. In the second round, the monad vivifies the second set of spiral, and through them runs the prana connected with the etheric double. In the third round, the third set of spiral is awakened by the monadic life, and through them courses the gamic prana, which makes sensation of pleasure and pain possible. In the fourth round, the monadic life awakens the fourth set of spiral, which becomes the vehicle for the kamamanasic prana, thus making the atoms fit to be built into a brain for thought. This is as far as normal humanity has progressed. Certain yoga practices, in the use of which great caution is required, lest injury should be inflicted on the brain, bring about the development of the fifth and sixth set of spiral, which serve as channels for higher forms of consciousness. The seven spiral in the atom must not be confused with the worlds, of which there are 10, 3 coarser and 7 finer. In the 3 coarser worlds flow currents of different electricities, whilst the 7 finer worlds respond to etheric waves of all kinds, sound, light, heat, etc. The secret doctrine speaks of prana as the invisible or fiery lives which supply the microbes with vital constructive energy, thus enabling them to build the physical cells. The size of the smallest bacterium relatively to that of a fiery life being as that of an elephant to the tiniest infusoria. Every visible thing in the universe was built by such lives, from conscious and divine primordial man, down to the unconscious agents that construct matter. By the manifestation of prana, the spirit which is speechless appears as the speaker. The whole constructive vitality, in the universe and in man, is thus summed up as prana. An atom is also a life, but the consciousness is that of the third logos. A microbe is a life, the consciousness being that of the second logos, appropriated and modified by the planetary logos and the spirit of the earth. The secret doctrine also speaks of a fundamental dogma of occult science, that the sun is the storehouse of vital force, and that from the sun issue those life currents which thrill through space, as through the organisms of every living thing on earth. Paracelsus thus referred to prana: the whole of the microcosm is potentially contained in the liquor vitae, a nerve fluid, in which is contained the nature, quality, character, and essence of all beings. Paracelsus also spoke of it as the archeus. Dr. B. Richardson, FRS, wrote of it as nervous ether. The Nasmyth willow leaves are the reservoirs of the solar vital energy, the real sun being hidden behind the visible sun, and generating the vital fluid, which circulates throughout our system in a 10-year cycle. The old Aryan sang that Sriya hiding behind his yogi, robes his head that no one could see. The dress of the Indian ascetics is dyed a red-yellow hue, with pinkish patches on it, and is intended rudely to represent the prana in men's blood, the symbol of the vital principle in the sun, or what is now called the chromosphere, the rose-colored region. The nerve centers themselves are of course provided by the food sheath or dense body, but prana is the controlling energy which acts through the nerve centers, making the food sheath obedient, and fashioning it for the purpose which the I, seated in the higher intelligence, demands. It is important to note that although the nerves are in the physical body, it is not the physical body, as such, which has the power of feeling. As a sheath, the physical body does not feel. It is a receiver of impressions only. The outer body receives the impact, but in its own cells does not lie the power of feeling pleasure or pain, except in a very vague, dull and massive way, giving rise to vague, diffused feelings, such as those of general fatigue, for example. The physical contacts are transmitted inwards by prana, and these are acute, sharp, keen, specific, quite different from the heavy, diffused sensations deriving from the cells themselves. It is thus in every case prana which gives the sense activity to the physical organs, and which transmits the outer vibration to the sense centers, which are situated in karma, in the sheath which is next to prana, the manomai kosha. It is by means of the etheric double that prana runs along the nerves of the body and thus enables them to act not only as the carriers of external impacts but also of motor force, originated from within. It is the play of the pranic life currents in the etheric doubles of minerals, vegetables, and animals which awaken out of latency the astral matter involved in the structure of their atomic and molecular constituents, thus producing a thrill which enables the monad of form to draw in astral materials, which are built by nature spirits into a loosely constituted mass, the future astral body. In the mineral, astral matter is so little active that there is no perceptible working from the astral to the physical. In the higher plants, the increased astral activity affects their etheric and, through this, their dense matter. With animals, the much greater astral consciousness affects their etheric doubles and, by these etheric vibrations, the building of the nervous system, which was dimly foreshadowed only in plants, is stimulated. It is thus impulses set up by the consciousness, willing to experience, which cause astral vibrations, these producing vibrations in etheric matter. The impulse thus comes from the consciousness, but the actual building of the nervous system, which the consciousness at this stage is unable to undertake, is performed by etheric nature spirits, directed by the shining ones of the third elemental kingdom and the logos working through the group soul. There appears first in the astral body a center, having the function of receiving and responding to vibrations from outside. From this center, vibrations pass to the etheric body, causing veretheric vortices which draw into themselves dense physical particles. These eventually form a nerve cell, and groups of cells, which, receiving vibrations from the outer physical world, transmit them back to the astral centers, the physical and astral centers thus acting and reacting on one another, each in consequence becoming more complicated and more effective. Out of these nerve cells, the sympathetic system is built first, by impulses, as we have seen, originating in the astral world. Later the cerebrospinal system is constructed, by impulses originating in the mental world. The sympathetic system always remains directly connected with the astral centers. But it is important to note that these astral centers are not the astral chakrams, of which we shall speak later, but are merely aggregations in the astral sheath which form the beginnings of the centers which will build the organs in the physical body. The astral chakrams are not formed till a much later period in evolution. From these centers then, which are not the chakrams, 10 organs in the physical are formed, 5 to receive impressions, jnanendriyas, knowledge senses or sense centers in the brain, which eventually are connected with eyes, ears, tongue, nose and skin, and 5 to convey vibrations from consciousness to the outer world, karmendriyas, action senses, or sense centers which cause action, these being the motor centers in the brain, to be connected with the sense organs in hands, feet, larynx, organs of generation and excretion. The student must carefully note that the prana which courses along the nerves is quite separate and distinct from what is called a man's magnetism, or nerve fluid, which is generated within his own body. This nerve fluid or magnetism keeps the etheric matter circulating along the nerves, or, more accurately, along a coating of ether which surrounds each nerve, much as the blood circulates through the veins. And just as the blood carries oxygen to the body, so does the nerve fluid convey prana. Furthermore, just as the particles of the dense physical body are constantly changing and being replaced by fresh particles derived from food, water, and air, so are the particles of the etheric body being constantly changed and replaced by fresh etheric particles, these being taken into the body along with the food eaten, with the air breathed, and with prana, in the form known as the vitality globule, as will presently be described. Prana, or vitality, exists on all planes, physical, astral, mental, etc. Prana, the one life, is the nave to which are attached the 7 spokes of the universal wheel, hymn to prana, Atharva Veda, 11, 4. We are here, however, concern only with its appearance and methods of work in the lowest, the physical plane. It must also be noted that prana on the physical plane is sevenfold, that is, there are seven varieties of it. We have seen already that it is quite separate and distinct from light, heat, etc., but nevertheless it's. The following diagrams should be followed in book to be understood, and the audiobook here is not so covering alone. Diagram to the vitality globule, 1, an ultimate physical atom. For details of atom, see occult chemistry, plate 2, and page 5, etc. Manifestation on the physical plane appears to depend upon sunlight, for when sunlight is abundant, prana also appears in abundance, and where sunlight is absent, prana also is deficient. Prana emanates from the sun, and enters some of the ultimate physical atoms which float about in the Earth's atmosphere in countless myriads. Although we say that this pranic force enters the physical atom, it does not do so from outside, it enters from a higher dimension, the fourth, and so appears to the clairvoyant as welling up within the atom. There are thus two forces which enter the atom from within, 1, the will force of the logos, which holds the atom together in its proper shape, 2, the pranic force. It is important to note that prana comes from the second aspect of the solar deity, whereas the will force emanates from the third aspect. Diagram to the vitality globule, 2, vitality force enters atoms. The effect of prana on atoms is entirely different from that of electricity, light, heat or other expressions of Fohat. Electricity, rushing through the atoms, deflects them and holds them in a certain way, and also imparts to them a separate and distinct vibration rate. Any of the variants of Fohat, such as electricity, light, or heat, cause an oscillation of the atom as a whole, an oscillation the size of which is enormous as compared with that of the atom itself. These forces of course acting on the atom from without. Students of occultism will be familiar with the shape and structure of the ultimate physical atom, the smallest particle of matter on the physical plane, out of combinations of which are made the various combinations we know as solid, liquid, gas, etc. in drawings in this document. Therefore these ultimate physical atoms are indicated as outlines only. Diagram of vitality globule, 3, the atom attracts 6 other atoms. The vitality force endows the atom with an additional life, and gives it a power of attraction. The force of prana, then, radiated from the sun, enters some atoms in the atmosphere and causes them to glow. Such an atom, charged with this additional life, has a sixfold power of attraction, so that it immediately draws round it 6 other atoms. These it arranges in a definite form, making what is termed in occult chemistry a hyper-meta-proto-element, a combination of matter on the subatomic subplane. This combination, however, differs from all others so far observed, in that the force which creates it and holds it together comes from the second aspect of the solar deity instead of from the third. This form is known as the vitality globule, and is shown in the appended drawing, which is enlarged from that on p. 45 of occult chemistry. This little group is the exceedingly brilliant bead upon the male or positive snake in the chemical element oxygen, and it is also the heart of the central globe in radium. Diagram to the vitality globule 4, formation of the globule, n.b. The vitality globule is a meta-meta-proto element, that is, on the subatomic level, and is unique in that it is created and held together by force emanating from the second logos. HSI page 67, OC, page 45. The globules, on account of their brilliance and extreme activity, can be seen by almost anyone who cares to look, darting about in the atmosphere in immense numbers, especially on a sunny day. The best way to see them is to face directly away from the sun and focus the eyes a few feet away, with a clear sky as background. Brilliant as is the globule, it is almost colorless, and may be compared to white light. It has already been remarked that although the force which vivifies these globules is quite different from light, it nevertheless appears to depend upon light for the power of manifestation. In brilliant sunshine this vitality is constantly welling up afresh, and the globules are generated in incredible numbers, but in cloudy weather there is a great diminution in the number of globules formed, and during the night the operation appears to be entirely suspended. During the night, therefore, we may be said to be living upon the stock manufactured during the previous day, and although it appears practically impossible that it should ever be entirely exhausted, that stock evidently does run low when there is a long succession of cloudy days. It is, of course, the work of the physical elemental to defend the body and to assimilate vitality, as will be described in detail in the next chapter, in order to recuperate the physical body. Whilst the physical body is awake, the nerves and muscles are kept tense, ready for instant action.